Hello there and welcome to the official EFL podcast. We're firmly in the middle of all the wonderful playoff madness. There's a day of destiny in Leagues 1 and 2 coming up this weekend at Wembley for four very lucky sides. And to run the rule over all those, the runners and the riders, is the man that will cover absolutely everything as per usual, David Stowell. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm enjoying the chaos that comes with this stage of the season. Because, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? We aim for this point of the season all the way through the cold months and the wearing thermals to games and the charging through the rain and all of that. And it almost feels like it doesn't ever last long enough, this playoff chaos. But it's so good when it's here.
Mm-hmm. It's something we've all been very much looking forward to. Although, as at this time of record, I'm looking out the window and it's absolutely shelling it down. Yes. And we've gone from it being the toasty weekend where everyone's moaning about dehydration and pitches being too hard to potentially being in a position where, as we've seen, David, I mean, have you known of that before? A semi-final in the playoffs being called off because a pitch was waterlogged.
Incredible scenes, as the phrase goes. I mean, it was remarkable. I've never known it. I was still shocked when it actually happened because, mm-hmm. You know, not that far away from where the game was being played, the weather was glorious all weekend and overnight, and then all of a sudden, you know, everyone sort of turns up to Crawley, and it's a swimming pool basically, and there was no way the game could go ahead. I mean, the only surprise for me was that it was pushed to the Tuesday rather mm-hmm. than the Wednesday. And I just thought, are they ever going to make that pitch playable in 24 hours? And fair play to them, they did. And we got quite a game on that pitch as a result of it. But yeah, crazy, really.
Well, let's start with the other side of that particular draw, which, of course, was Doncaster against Crewe. Now, the form that we spoke about, the form that we'd seen from Grant McCann and his men, seemed to have a lot of people thinking it would be a bit of a shoo-in for them. And then off the back of that first leg, 2-0 winners, hit the post as well. Pretty comprehensive as a victory. All the odds stacked against Crewe going into that second leg, about only a handful of teams overturning that 2-0 deficit. And it really was very close indeed, with one standout hero at the end of it with a pair of gloves on.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how things work sometimes, isn't it? There's no way it, really you could have predicted the winner being Crewe and that the hero was going to be Max Strieck. I mean, he's had a crazy season, hasn't he? Remarkable to think that he was Wickham's number one until he got sent off in February. Then he sort of found himself out of the team and not being able to get a game, went on emergency loan to Crewe, and all of a sudden, here he is popping up being the hero. And of course, he already knew when he played that game he wasn't getting another contract from Wickham. So effectively, he was playing in that playoff semi-final second leg as a free agent almost in Crazy. The shop window. Mm-hmm. And there he is being the hero. And the best thing of all was that when he made that second save, he didn't realize he'd won it.
Did you see the reaction?
So he's just thinking, oh, I've saved another one. Brilliant. Come on, lads. Let's get through this. And all the lads suddenly are running towards him. And he's like, I've done it.
It was so bizarre. Because like the split second looking back towards the fans and you're thinking, no, you must know that's the end of the shootout by virtue of the fact that you got five kicks each.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because we always watch football, and I always think about this with penalty shootouts. Mm. We watch with the scoreline in the top corner of the screen,
yes.
with the green
the
dots and the red
there.
Dots. Yeah. It's all there. So that if you switch on in the middle of a penalty shootout, you know straight away, right, they're winning, and that's mm-hmm. fine, sorted. And as a commentator, I'm always very careful to make sure yes. that I am making notes as I go,
yeah.
who has scored, who has missed, what the score is, so that I always know if we're one kick away from someone winning or whatever, mm-hmm. or at least that's the plan. So you don't want to be in that situation where as a commentator you're saying, oh, he saved a penalty, great. And then everyone's suddenly hugging and you haven't realised that they've won the game. So it's a horrible situation to be in as a broadcaster. But as a goalkeeper, I suppose his mindset is, yeah. right, if there's another one, I'll just save it. And, you know, that's the way he was obviously thinking, is I'll just try and keeping them out, and then realise that he didn't have to anymore.
And of course, what helped, which whether you call it gamesmanship, whether you call it unfair, whether you call it a certain type of whatever-y, his opposite number had a bottle on with information about penalties, didn't he? What happened there?
Yes, it got launched, didn't it, into the crowd. So the homework that was done by Doncaster Rovers was out of the window, and then it's just down to memory and people trying to get messages onto the field and all the rest of it. And it's I always wondered when that became a thing, you know, the bottle with the instructions on it, whether someone from the opposition was going to get their hands on it, and indeed it's happened. So I'll have to think up a different way now, maybe a note down the shin pad of the goalkeeper or whatever.
All on the gloves.
Just scribble it on the gloves.
And wipe it off.
Yeah.
So they got through against Doncaster. Quick word on Donny. I mean, the wonderful work that had been done, considering they were 20th in March, is there for all to see. They'll be there post-season. The post-mortem kicks in. Grant McCann will look at what he needs, what he doesn't need, what perhaps could have gone better. That blitz in the first 15 minutes from Crewe was what got them back into the game, wasn't it? And I didn't sense any sense of complacency. I just thought Crewe came flying out the traps. And by the time they kind of came round Donny, the game almost really settled after that, didn't it? So then and you'll get this when you're watching the game as well, Stanley, when you're watching it, in your gut, you're kind of going, well, I think the scoring's done now. You think, I can see extra time and pens coming. Was that what you thought?
It was petering out a little bit, wasn't it? Mm. Because I think there comes a point when, I suppose, it's the same in a league table compared to in a match like this. When you're chasing, you've got something to aim for, haven't you? Yeah. And you're desperately trying to overturn that team in the bottom space in the playoffs to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. When you're in it, then your mindset changes. And it's the same when you're chasing a lead. And then when you're level again, you don't want to risk too much. Because then if Donny had scored to make it 3-2 on aggregate, psychologically, maybe the Crewe bubble bursts then, yeah, and it's all done, because they've worked so hard to get back into it. So they were being cautious. Donny didn't want to lose it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the extra time in that sense is always a bit slow paced, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's risk and reward, and there's always a jeopardy to it. But I mean, Grant McCann and Doncaster have done so well to get to where they were. If the season had been flipped on its head and they'd had a terrific start and not so good an end, then the playoffs dream would have died a long time ago, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. It's just how it worked out. It kept them hoping week on week that they'd get in. And when they did, I mean, I think most people were probably expecting a Doncaster MK Dons final based on form, and MK Dons being in the fourth spot, Donny being in the fifth spot as well. It would have made poetic sense, if you like. But football isn't like that. And, no. You know, fair play to the two sides who got through. And of course, Lee Bell, who played as a substitute the last time Crewe were at Wembley in a playoff final, takes his team there, and the penalties were all too much for him, weren't they?
I mean, he just looked shell-shocked by the end of it, didn't he? We were trying to get a word with him, and he just kind of just didn't really know. And throwing as well the injury situation they've had to deal with, it's been phenomenal, really. So looking forward to what they can do there. So if that was a little bit more stressful than potentially both sets of fans, players, management were after, then the other side of the equation, my word, that, I mean, from a scoring point of view, it's a gulf, isn't it, between Crawley and MK Dons. As you said, that first game, put back because of a waterlogged pitch. And then all the chat about that was, whose rhythm does that upset the most? And quite clearly, there's only one answer to that.
Well, I mean, The biggest aggregate win in playoff history, isn't it? It was a real beating in the end. And that said, that's not to sort of rub salt in the wounds for an MK Dons side who've had a terrific season. Mm-hmm. And you always feel for the team that finishes fourth, albeit 8 points behind Mansfield. So considerably off the automatic spots. Yeah. You know, there's not an injustice there. But obviously, some people would say if you didn't have the playoff system and you just promoted the top four, then they'd be up. But when you consider that they finished 8 points clear of Crawley, then they will feel, you know, a bit of unfairness to the whole thing. But that's the playoffs. That's what we all enter into. That's that we know that when the season starts, when you kick the first ball. I think that the disappointing thing for Mike Williamson will be after the first leg, he sort of came out in the media and talking to us, and also obviously speaking to his players, sort of saying nothing is irreversible. We can do this. They scored three in the first leg. We can score three in the second leg. Let's go for it, sort of thing. But then to concede after just 3 minutes, having played the ball out from the back and trying to build straight away, that the mountain's just got so much higher, hasn't it, in terms of trying to overturn the deficit to go four down on aggregate. And they just couldn't recover. Even though they got on the scoreboard themselves, they just couldn't get back into it properly.
It's a hefty result in the end, 8-1. Given as well, I mean, Scott Lindsay, very vocal, and as you should be. This is for all the people that perhaps doubted us. But I mean, in the interest of balance, those doubts come in because you look at the season they had last year, and you're kind of saying, "Well, that's the funny thing about football analysis, isn't it? That sense of what you believe a team can do and what is the reality of what a team can achieve. Given what we've seen last season, given how we'd seen them this year, securing that spot on the last day of the season against Grimsby, I like a bit of fighting talk, though. I think I can understand why, but there is a bit of context to that. Perhaps people saying we couldn't see Crawley in the playoff final, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it's a fair enough comment. But the interesting word you used there was team.
Yeah,
excuse me. I think as a team they've been terrific. When you look at the individuals that they brought in during the course of the summer, a lot of people would have looked at those players and with all the greatest respect and thought, yeah, well, they're not scary signings to opponents or to rivals, but they've brought players in who've just gelled so well. They've got the best out of some of the players. I mean, Scott Lindsay's talked at length about various individuals, and we'll go on to a few of those, I think, in a bit. But the way he's brought players in and improved everything about them and about the club as a whole. You mentioned, I mean, last season very nearly down. This season could quite possibly go up. It's a heck of a turnaround, and that comes down to characters, doesn't it, as well as quality. Some of the characters they've got in the team, Corey Alley, the goalkeeper, not just a very good goalkeeper at this level, and has proved that throughout the course of the season, defying numbers, XG against. He's the best goalkeeper in terms of preventing XG in the division, but he's also a real character, and you can see that through the way he plays, and the spine of the team is strong mentally as well as obviously pretty good with the football at their feet. So I suppose that's the kind of thing that a team in the playoffs needs to have is people to lift them up when the chips are down, or to drive them on when they're winning and say, okay, right, we're one up, let's go two up, let's go three up. And the minute, like I say, they went four up on aggregate, there was no way back really, but they just kept going and they ended up 8-1 on aggregate, which is ridiculous. And some of the goals were great as well, weren't they? And, you know, people can perhaps look at goals and say, well, he scored that from 3 yards out. It's an easy goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the work that's gone into making that easy for the goal scorer to finish starts off with players like you in the middle who put all the hard yards in, and then the people at the top get all the glory. Isn't that right?
Well, on the opposition giving the ball away, and then you look around going, "Oh right, sorry lads, I've put you in the mess again." Right. So 1 o'clock on Sunday at Wembley, Crawley against Crewe, with a place in League One up for grabs. What are your general thoughts going into that, Stowley, and who should we be keeping a keen eye on?
Well, first of all, it's not the final that many would have predicted, and I wouldn't have predicted either, so I'm not going to pretend that I saw this coming. So first thing to say is congratulations, I think, to all four teams who got into the playoffs and for the way they got in. And then, of course, to the two who've got to the final. And then you look at sort of either individual players or battles, don't you, on the field, and sort of see, well, where could this be won? I think one of the key men on Sunday will be Scott Lindsay, because of the way he thinks tactically about the game. And he was sort of very quick to almost sort of semi pat himself on the back a little bit for the way he set the team up after the second leg. Because let's be honest, even with a 3-0 lead, you go to Stadium MK up against a side who are fourth in the table with all the quality they've got. You've got to do something to make sure that they don't bring the crowd into the equation and that they don't dictate. So he did that, and he changed things throughout the course of the two legs. He's pointed to Liam Kelly as being a terrific player and a player who suffered relegation last season, but has come into Crawley and done really well. Obviously, Danilo Orsi, the goal scorer of the hat trick in the second leg, as I said, scoring from various positions in the field through the season, but a lot of close range efforts in the playoffs. But that shouldn't be sniffed at because of the way they played as a team. Solid goalkeeper as well. And then you look at Crew. I had a chat with Mickey Demetriou at the Player of the Year Awards, the EFL Awards, rather.
How good was he in the semi-final? My word.
And of course, he had that slip in the first leg, scored his 10th goal of the season in the second leg, and was the best player on the pitch. And I was talking to him, funny enough, at the awards about his goal scoring for the season, and saying, you know, you've obviously done brilliantly at the back, but we've got 9 goals for the season. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I really want to get to 10. I want to get to double figures. And, you know, maybe we can do that and see where it takes us, sort of thing. Well, it's taking them to Wembley, so fair play. So he's going to be key. Shiloh Tracy can come up with anything on his day as someone who can really sort of make things happen for them. And he's had his best ever season in terms of appearances in a senior team. And then Elliot Nevitt with the goals as well, 18 goals for the season. So, I mean, you kind of look at look at Crewe and Crawley and think there are players on both sides who can win it. And I think it will probably be quite tight, which probably means someone will win it by 3-0 or something like that. But, you know, it's an exciting final because it's a little bit more against the grain of what many people expected. Yes.
I suppose almost a bit of an outsider final. And I mean that with the greatest respect to both teams involved, because as you say, all the kind of experts, shall we say, would have been looking at two other teams. But congratulations to both. I like the fact you mentioned Elliot Never. Obviously, well thought of course, at Crewe and a highly valued player. But something about him and Richard Wood going at each other for the best part of two games, I really did enjoy. Okay, so that's two teams trying to climb into League One. Now, two teams trying to climb out of League One and into the Championship on Saturday. So Saturday tea time, 4:30, Bolton against Oxford. Let's go with Bolton first in their semi-final, because maybe they would have had the shivers from this particular fixture last season, of course, because it was a repeat of that particular semi-final. And in the second leg, Ian Everett, the Bolton boss, has called the last 15 minutes the most unenjoyable of his life. obviously, we're all prone to hyperbole in this wonderful game, aren't we? But he's probably right in a way, isn't he? Because of what his team, his players and the atmosphere put him through.
Yeah, it's funny. That's one of the quotes I'd circled as well that he obviously came out with. And you know, I think Mike Williamson said similar about the second leg. He said it's the worst match I've ever watched. The worst thing I've ever seen in terms of being a part of it. You know, he felt that, and you can understand Ian Everett, obviously. I mean, particularly when they led 5-2 on aggregate at halftime in the second leg. So you're 3/4 of the way through the job, if you like, to try and get to Wembley. You've got a 3-goal cushion. If you give that to any manager in the EFL, any manager in world football in a playoff game like that, they'd snap your hand off, wouldn't they, and think, right, we can relax a little bit there. Not obviously they wouldn't want to get complacent, but you'd think that should see us over the line. Mm-hmm. If we let it go from there, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And they gave it a go, didn't they, at letting it go. And credit has to go to Barnsley, obviously, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Sam Cosgrove was lively throughout, got a couple of goals. Adam Phillips with the other on the night, which just made you wonder. But I must admit, early on in the season, you asked me a few times when we were talking about League One, will Portsmouth get over the line?
Yes.
Who's going to win the title? Who's going to get that second spot? And for a fair while, I fancied Bolton to actually get the title. Mm-hmm. They just sort of dropped off a little bit, which allowed Portsmouth to stay there, and credit to Portsmouth and Derby for going up. But I just always thought there was something in Bolton that would see them at least to Wembley, if not up. Now, whether they overcome Oxford, we shall see. But I wonder if the huge win they had at Wembley last season in the Papa John's Trophy final over Plymouth Argyle, whether that will help them on their way in the final on Saturday, because the majority of the squad, the sort of spine of that team, are still there. They walk in, you know, chest puffed out, thinking, mm-hmm. we've done it here before. Mm-hmm. So it's not a place that holds fear for them. Whereas Oxford have had a few difficult experiences at Wembley, lost to Wickham, of course, a few years back in that COVID playoff final. So, I just wonder if that's the kind of thing, now that Bolton have seen off Barnsley finally, mm-hmm. whether they walk out at Wembley with that spring in their step a little bit.
There was a bit of chat, obviously, going into the playoffs, where you look at a side that from a perspective point of view, one that's been, as you say, knocking on the door of the top two, and then having to deal with, again, in inverted commas, the disappointment of missing out, instead of seeing it as, well, we've got another bite of the cherry here. That seems to be, it almost felt like that last 15 or 20 minutes was something that they needed to get through to deal with that sense of jeopardy, didn't it, going into what the final is. And it's such a key point you make there, Stanley, about them being at Wembley and being so comprehensive against Plymouth, and where that does stand them in good stead. Because undoubtedly, and we'll come on to Oxford in just a second, Bolton are in that bracket of big club, wrong division type territory. Pompey have sorted themselves out. Derby have sorted themselves out. And in the teams that are left, they've conquered Barnsley. It's now on them, really, to right that particular wrong of them being in League One, isn't it?
It is, but it's interesting, isn't it, when we talk about clubs being big for their level and all of that, it's a generational thing at times, isn't it? Because you think about some clubs, Oxford being a very good example of where Oxford have been in the past, but maybe some of the sort of younger generation now just think of Oxford as a lower league side, whereas they've obviously had great success in the past, and you know, it's always nice to see when they bring out a new kit that kind of has the nod to the old days of Oxford United and the success they had in Jim Smith and all those kind of things. But yeah, with the Bolton thing, and I've always thought about this in particularly League One, because the Championship, if you drop from the Premier League to the Championship, you're still in that kind of top two tiers zone, aren't you?
Whereas it's still within shooting distance, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you drop to the third tier if you're an ex-Premier League club, and a lot of people then assume you've got a massive budget. Obviously, you've got a big stadium because you've been in the top flight and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
And it can all weigh heavy on the players who are involved, can't it? And we've seen it before with players and teams struggling in League One to get out. And I think that's where Ian Evatt's recruitment's been really good over the last few seasons. He's not necessarily had the money to work with that people might think from outside, but then budgets compared to other teams are perhaps a bit higher. And you think the last time they played at Championship level, 2019, they were about to go into administration. The club was living right on the edge.
Yeah.
So there's a real sort of, there's a poetry to them getting back up, but at the same time, there's that pressure to get that club up, isn't there? And we spoke to Ian, didn't we, earlier on?
We did.
On the pod, and you know, he was very calm on the pod, whereas he's not necessarily the most calm on the touchline. But that's, you need to drive a team on like that, don't you?
Yeah.
And the certain characters that he's brought in are clearly people, not just players, that he thinks can get Bolton back to that kind of level.
So taking on Oxford United, we'll come on to their manager in just a second, because as you say about Oxford fans knowing the history, Des Buchanan will absolutely know that, being an Oxford fan himself and now leading the charge after a very kind of nomadic existence when it comes to coaching and his professional career. They overcame Posh. Again, possibly again, with all due respect paid to the teams that we're talking about, I think people were looking at Peterborough as in the kings of the one-off game, where they've got so much firepower they can put a team to bed. But again, a very, very close affair over the two legs, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this was perhaps tighter than a lot of people thought, and not because the sides weren't sort of well matched, because you know, fourth and fifth in the division. Was it 7 points between the two of them over the course of the campaign? And I think the thing with Peterborough is, over the last few years, we've always thought of Peterborough as a side who will score goals but will also concede goals. And they're generally a team that scores more than they concede, isn't it? We'll score more than you sort of
the
scenario.
Entertainers.
Which is not necessarily something that sits well with Darren Ferguson, because he doesn't want them to concede lots of goals. But he's obviously, he likes the fact that they attack well, they attack with flair, and that they've obviously brought so many attacking players on in the ranks in the last few years. Mason Efren Clark being the latest.
Tremendous.
Mason Clark, we can get his names in the right order. Being the latest one, obviously, and he'll step up to the Championship with Coventry City in the next season. You think... of this one, I was obviously Oxford going in with the advantage after the first leg. Mm-hmm. You just wondered if Peterborough at home could power on through.
Yeah.
But Oxford did really well, I think, for large parts of the second leg, to just sort of keep Posh at arm's length and stop them from damaging them too much, even though they had a fair bit of the ball. And the equaliser in the second leg was crucially timed, wasn't it, for Oxford, the penalty, because it was just before half-time. And you think, if Peterborough go in with the lead, therefore it's level on aggregate, then it psychologically, it's a different second half of the second leg.
Yeah.
But scoring just before the break, and Darren Ferguson even admitted it, he said that conceding it when we did lost us the tie, because it stopped that momentum that they had going into the interval, and then maybe coming out in the second half and going on to win it. So it's not just scoring goals, is it? It's scoring goals at certain times, which
yes.
can massively influence games. And a lot of managers tell me this when I do interviews with them after the game, and you talk about, was the timing of that happening in a match crucial? And it often is, isn't it?
So it's two seasons on the bounce for that playoff heartbreak. Slightly less dramatic than obviously missing out after the Sheffield Wednesday game for Peterborough United. And of course, on the back of that EFL Trophy victory earlier on in the season. As I said, we mentioned Des Buchanan and the job that he's done, because it was all going swimmingly, wasn't it, under Liam Manning, and he decided to kind of disappear over to Bristol City, as is a manager's wont, these career-minded and very driven, ambitious individuals. So Des comes back in. I mean, within those early exchanges, potentially, whether he's got half an eye on it, a thumping defeat against the team that they've faced, don't they, on Saturday. But in the sense, again, of that season-on-season difference, just avoiding relegation last season, seeing what they've done this, do they go into this final as underdogs for you?
I think a lot of people will look to Bolton because of the history, the size of the club, that kind of thing. And when I say history, I mean sort of recent history, more recent than Oxford's history, if you like. So Bolton will go into it as favourites. But that might suit Oxford because they will have gone into that semi-final against Peterborough with many people writing them off saying, right, well, it's Peterborough in the final, probably against Bolton, and that's that. And some clubs just revel in that sort of underdog tag, don't they? And some players like the fact that they go into a game when people aren't expecting things from them, or that they can prove people wrong. And, you know, I think that might well help Oxford in that sense. And it might well be something that, you know, an hour gone, 0-0 at Wembley, if that's the case, then it can spur that team on to just find that extra yard. Whereas the team who are favourites then perhaps think, well, this isn't as easy as many thought, or perhaps we thought. And therefore, you know, it becomes an even more of a challenge.
So Saturday tea time. Tea time, that's a very northern phrase. I understand sometimes that confuses people in different parts of the country. what are you thinking then? Let's see generally, once again, what you're thinking about the game, and potentially, I'm looking for match winners. I'm looking for game changers, Stowley. Who have you got for me?
Well, naturally, you look for goal scorers, don't you, in this sense? And Bolton with Dion Charles with 20 goals for the season. Mark Harris, who was an astute pickup from Cardiff City for Oxford. He's got a career best total of 19 for the season and ended the regular season with 6 goals in 6 games. So he came into the playoffs in form, didn't score in the playoffs for Oxford, but you know that kind of number of goals behind him just as you're getting towards the critical point of the season might well sort of see him have a spring in his step at Wembley. I love the story of Sam Long, who's an Oxfordshire boy, been at Oxford United since he was 9, and the kind of player who can really help the cause going in both directions, if you like, forwards and backwards. And obviously Cameron Branigan in the middle of the park, a key battle, I think, with Branigan and Josh Sheehan, who was terrific for Bolton all season. When he's played well, Bolton have really kicked on and in the League One team of the season this year. And Cameron Branigan has taken 10 penalties this season, scored the lot. And you never know if that might be crucial. You know, we've obviously seen Crew get through on penalties in the semi-final through to the final. You never know if a final might go to penalties or might be decided by a penalty. So he could be key. Those are perhaps people who sort of jump off the page for various different reasons for me. But, you know, ultimately it comes down to what the managers come up with as well, doesn't it? And the mentality of all those involved.
Just give us a flavour from your point of view of working in and around Wembley on days such as this, the prep that goes into it, the atmosphere, the nerves for a commentator?
Yeah, it's a really interesting assignment to have, I think, in commentary terms, because you can't help but get excited. It doesn't matter who's playing. It's a special place, and it's an honour to be asked, a privilege to be asked. I think it sort of also reinstates that people like what you do when you get the chance to do it. And I've been fortunate the last few years to commentate 7 times at Wembley for Sky, and that's really, really something that I'm proud of. And I think in terms of prep, you kind of prep everything you can within reason, because you never know what's going to happen. And like I mentioned about penalty shootouts, you know, you get to a penalty shootout and you've got to be all over it, not thinking, oh, well, that won't happen. It won't go to penalties. So-and-so will win it, because we've already seen in the semi-finals, you can't predict what's going to happen sensibly. So it's just about having lots of facts up your sleeves, but not always about the stats, because I think some people don't like too many statistics. It's about telling the story, isn't it, and adding something to it. And you talk about nerves. I think it's not so much necessarily nerves, because I think if you've done it long enough, you know you can do the job. Or at least hopefully people think you can do the job. But it's more a case of that sort of nervous excitement, if you like, at what's ahead. And the fact that you play a part in a club's special day. And I've always thought when I've done games at Wembley that when the goals go in for whoever they go in for, it's about creating or adding to that special moment. The moment's created by the players. It's all about the players. But you're there to try and lift that moment just that little bit more in whatever way you can. And hopefully when we do do that, we succeed rather than failing and annoying people. Yeah. But that's the...
It's such a good point there, though, because and I get it when I speak to people. Sorry to go off on a tangent, but I've got a very good commentator here, so I'm going to ask him the question. when you see iconic moments, when you hear iconic moments, there is a certain kind of faction that would say, well, that's... You write these lines down. You write these big, the money shot lines down. But you can't really, can you? You can have a, if you know the material, I presume, it then comes pretty naturally. If you know the narrative, the words flow off the back of that, because you can't for a second, given what the game is and how emotive and how unpredictable it is, go, at this stage, if he scores, this is the line that's coming out, surely. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it's not a script. It's not a... No. You know, if Mark Harris scores for Oxford in the 93rd minute to make it 5-4, I'll say this, you know, because you can't do that. I think it's just about appreciating, it's about the knowledge, if you like, the background of appreciating what the occasion means to the various clubs and the history they have at Wembley. Bolton have got a big history at Wembley, not just last year, obviously, but years before and all of that. So it's about appreciation, I think, of what that moment means to a club. And sometimes you know things just flow off the top of your head and they make a difference to people. And for example, Dan Mann, one of our colleagues, commentating on Huddersfield Town getting up to the Premier League, Christopher Schindler's penalty. I think he has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. He scores it and he takes that chance. And that name, that line of commentary is now the name of a Huddersfield Town podcast. And it's little things like that mean things to people.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice to be involved in that and to get messages from people saying, you know, that the way you did that final or that goal or whatever is nice. And, you know, there's a lot of not nice stuff said about commentators and pundits and people on social media. So when you get a nice message, it's special. And I think, you know, days at Wembley are special for players and managers and fans, but also for broadcasters. So we enjoy them when they come our way.
Yeah. So, and I'll say this as a very final thought, and it's purely because it was about the line about whether you've written it before. I was listening to Villa Liverpool last night, and obviously John Duran scoring two goals, and Rob Hawthorn, a colleague of ours, coming up with Duran, which I thought was... No, I mean, we're all waiting for it. Come on, Rob. Yes, he's done it. Because some of them, you get the collective groan, but some of them are just too good and too obvious not to tap in, aren't they?
Yeah, and some the ones that are painful to say, you often try and let your co-commentator say them so they get the stick. That's the trick. Is you dangle
that's the way you
dangle
deal
the fishing
injury.
Rod and you
Love
wait for
it.
David Prutton to say it. So.
Oh my word. On that Duran related, thank you so much. Another nickname for you is Captain Comprehensive, because you always deliver, my friend. It's been a pleasure chatting on here and, of course, throughout the season so far.
Well, I've been
enjoy
called
the
many
Wembley
things.
Weekend.
I'll take that. So I'll
good.
Yeah.
Good. It's meant with all of this, mate, all of the heart here.
There you go.
As cold as it can be sometimes. David Stalder helping us with our comprehensive EFL playoff for Leagues 1 and 2 preview. Hopefully you've enjoyed. If you have, please like, subscribe and follow where you can. Or if you're watching all the way through on YouTube, a big wave to you. Stanley, wave to everyone on YouTube.
I'll do that. There you go.
So cool. And he loves a thumbs up. Anyway, for myself and David Stowell, this has been another episode of the official EFL podcast. We shall see you the same time next week. Goodbye.